Omaha Public Radio presents another lecture program from the College of St. Mary on Noon Forum. We'll hear highlights from the 2016 Great Conversations Luncheon, presented annually by Kathy Simon and the College of St. Mary. The keynote address this year will be given by Karen Gettert-Shoemaker, author of The Meaning of Names. This program was recorded by Omaha Public Radio on Tuesday afternoon, April 5th, 2016, for broadcast at this time. The opinions expressed are those of the speaker and do not necessarily represent those of College of St. Mary, KIOS-FM, or the Omaha Public School District. Set in 1918 Holt County, Nebraska, The Meaning of Names follows the fictional character of Gerda Vogel and her German-American family as it copes with not only the 1918 flu pandemic, but also the prejudice and violence toward German-Americans during World War I. The Lincoln Journal Star wrote that this slender volume is deceptive in size. It is a book of big themes, true history and serious art, focusing on our Nebraska of not so long ago. Although fictional, the Holt County native says the novel's matrix was the family and local stories she heard while growing up. Shoemaker didn't set out to write about Nebraska, as Willa Cather already had a formidable claim to that territory. But what Shoemaker knew about the place and its stories had a firm hold on her. She researched the subject thoroughly, almost obsessively, before committing pen to paper. Shoemaker treads carefully around Willa Cather's haunt of Nebraska, but the state looms large as a character in Names, and her portrayal of it brings that famous author to mind. Tim Schaffert, author of The Swan Gondola, said Names is reminiscent of the fiction of Willa Cather and every bit as memorable. Lee Martin, The Bright Forever, a novel, described the novel as a haunting and tender story set in a time when nationalism led to prejudice against German Americans, a time when the influenza pandemic of 1918 killed millions. Shoemaker weaves an enduring story of faith, family, and love. Gerda Vogel is a character I'll remember always. Shoemaker's first collection of short stories, Night Sounds and Other Stories, won the 2003 Nebraska Book Award for Short Fiction. Her works have appeared in many journals, including Prairie Schooner, South Dakota Review, West Wind Review, Calliope, Credo, Fine Lines, The Nebraska Review, and was anthologized in Times of Sorrow, Times of Grace, Writing by Women of the Great Plains, among others. Her writing awards include a Nebraska Press Association Award for Feature Writing, a Vreeland Award, the Prairie Schooner Mary Sandoz Award for Fiction, and a Merit Award from the Nebraska Arts Council. Here now to introduce the program is Sister Mary Ann Stevens, the president of the College of St. Mary. The speaker will be introduced by Christine Farr, vice president for alumni and donor relations.
Good afternoon. I'm Dr. Mary Ann Stevens, sometimes known as Sister Mary Ann, and I always say that my mother called me Mary Ann, and that's what I'm most comfortable with. So whatever you want to call me, or whatever name I go by, I'm the president and very proud to be the president of College of St. Mary. And I want to thank you all for joining us for this 13th annual Great Conversations, which was started by Kathy Simon, who was inspired by Tom Fay to do this. And Tom Fay, as some of you know, was the husband of Joan Squires. I think that was his claim to fame. And Joan is the current executive director of the Omaha Performing Arts Society. So we are going to ask Kathy Simon to welcome you officially. We are also doing this afternoon in honor of Phyllis Glazier, an alum of College of St. Mary who passed away this past year and was very proud to be a College of St. Mary alum. She had attended college as an older student after she had raised her family. Her youngest son was a junior in college, and she said, "I'm not going to be the only one in this family without a college degree." And that was just the kind of toughness she had, and she loved great conversations. So the Glazier family, as well as Joan Squires, join us today with this anniversary tribute, if you will, to them. So Kathy, would you like to speak a little bit? Kathy started this, and she continues to sponsor it for us, Kathy Simon, and we are so very grateful.
Good afternoon, and I'm so glad you're here, and this is really a special occasion for me because I'm honoring two people and two families that mean so much to me. And really, I only met these people because they loved my husband first. I did not meet Phyllis until after or just before I got married. And Phyllis and Dick were married, and to this day, they loved each other so much. And I'm sure that they're having a fabulous time right now catching up on gossip, games, jokes. They were the best of friends throughout their entire lives. And had it not been for Tom Fay, who met Steve first in Arizona through the Arizona State University, their great conversations program called Presidential Enrichment, that I would not have gotten to the College of St. Mary, because Tom was working here and he said, I think we should do a program similar to what we do at ASU. And so Tom connected me with Mary Ann, and we brought some ASU people in and we discussed it, and that's how Great Conversations got started and will continue. So I love both of these people. I love both of these families. And the way I have chosen to honor Tom is to endow a concert series at the College of St. Mary in his name. And the way I've chosen to remember Phyllis is that I am going to endow a scholarship in her name for women over 40. So that's all I really have to say. And if anyone in the room right now has a quick memory of Tom or Phyllis they'd like to share, I'd love to hear it. If not, on with the show.
One of the times that we had great conversations here, I had this skirt on. And Phyllis came up to me and she said, Susan, I love your skirt. Where did you get it? And I told her it was a catalog. And the next time I saw her, she had it on. And I did not know about Phyllis. I did not know she had died. And so I'm just thinking God knew I should wear this today.
That's wonderful.
Thank you. Thank you.
I'm Christine Farr, Vice President for Alumni and Donor Relations at College of St. Mary, and I want to add to Kathy and Sister Mary Ann's welcome to all of you here this afternoon. In the interest of time, we're going to begin our program now, but please continue to enjoy your lunch or your dessert if you're not quite done yet. I would like to introduce you first to a current College of St. Mary student. Her name is Mitzi Infante Magana, a senior human biology major, and she's going to very briefly share her story of her journey to a college degree at College of St. Mary. Please help me welcome her to the podium.
I arrived to the United States when I was 7, completely unaware that I was undocumented. It was a struggle adjusting to this new place. Every Christmas, I would cry because I wanted to go home and celebrate it with my grandparents and all of my cousins. My dad was the sole provider for a family of 6 that eventually grew to be a family of 7. And I honestly don't know how he made ends meet. I did not find out I was undocumented until my junior year in high school, when I began to apply for colleges. It was a hard reality to accept because I knew I would graduate as valedictorian, but I did not know if I could even get into college. I could not apply for scholarships even though I had the GPA and the resume for many of them. I even had a college counselor tell me to not bother applying for any school because I wouldn't be able to get in without a Social Security number. It was at a college fair at my school that I met Maria Luisa Gaston and heard about College of St. Mary. She encouraged me to apply at CSM and to the Marie Curie scholarship that they offered. In the spring of my senior year, I was awarded the Marie Curie scholarship that would help pay for my 4 years at College of St. Mary. That was the day that my life changed. Ever since stepping foot on campus, I have taken advantage of every opportunity. I became involved in clubs and volunteer opportunities. I took on leadership positions that I never thought I could hold. I did not see myself as a leader, and CSM has helped change that. My leadership skills have grown so much due to the different opportunities given to me. I have become more confident in myself, and I am capable of making decisions that I would have been scared to make 4 years ago. CSM has become a second home to me. It holds a very special place in my heart. Everyone that I have met has helped me on this journey that I am on. I have gained some great mentors and that have heard my fears and struggles and have also shared my happiness. I am an aspiring physician assistant, and now that I hold my permanent residence card, I hope to start the physician assistant program, master's program, this fall at CSM. I didn't know I could even go to college in the first place, much less get a master's degree. I hope to become a PA that will serve the underserved Latino community and focus specifically in women's health and prenatal care. I eventually want to become a mentor for younger undocumented students because I know the difference that it can make. CSM has been a blessing to me. My life has changed 360 degrees, and all because someone believed that I, a foreign-born, undocumented Latina woman, could actually succeed. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Mitzi, for sharing your story, as well as all of the exceptional contributions that you have made here at the university. And now I would like to introduce our honored speaker, Dr. Karen Gettert-Shoemaker, who is here today to speak about her book, The Meaning of Names. I enjoyed sharing dinner last evening with Karen and her husband, and I learned that Karen wears many hats. She is a writer, a teacher, a public speaker, and a business owner. She's a true homegrown talent, having grown up near O'Neill, Nebraska. She received her PhD in creative writing from the University of Nebraska in Lincoln in 1997. Karen's fiction and poetry have been published in the London Independent, the South Dakota Review, and the Nebraska Review, just to name a few places. Her first collection of short fiction, Night Sounds and Other Stories, was published in 2002. She is currently a writing mentor with the University of Nebraska MFA in Writing program and has taught literature and writing at both University of Nebraska campuses. The book she will speak to us about today, The Meaning of Names, was published in 2014 and selected by public vote as the Omaha Reads book selection for 2014. It has also recently been awarded the One Book, One Nebraska Award for 2016. Without further ado, please help me give a warm welcome to Karen Gettert-Shoemaker.
Thank you all for coming. I'm going to try to leave it in the holder because I will drop the microphone or something. Before I start reading and talking about the book, I want to say something about College of St. Mary's. I'm an almost alum of the College of St. Mary's, and I wanted to make clear. Had I just had the nerve to walk through the doors, I think I'd been like Mitzi, where somebody would have helped me figure it out. I grew up in a poor family, and I was a lost child in high school. I didn't know it, but apparently others did. And so when it was time to go to college, there was no funds available. And my guidance counselor didn't tell me anything about financial aid or anything of that sort, not even how to get it, but that it existed. And so I didn't think I was college material. And when I moved to Omaha and got my first jobs in Omaha, minimum wage jobs, one of them was right over here at what used to be the Blue Cross Blue Shield building right across the street. And when I would leave work, I would look over at College of St. Mary's longingly and think, maybe I can go to college someday. And it took me several years. I was 24 before I started college. And finally figured out financial aid and scholarships and the like, and did all right as a student, but I still was such a surprise to the people back home when I went back for my 25th college reunion after I got a PhD. I was like a pinball being bounced from one person to another with them saying variations of all the people on the planet who could get a PhD, Karen Gettert, you're the last one. So I surprised a lot of people, but I might not have had such a long and rocky road if I just had the courage to walk over here and talk to one of the helpful people then, but I'm happy with the direction that I went. But it's just part of it is that finding people who will help you to get to where you need to go. And I've had a lot of tremendous helpers over the years, and some of them don't know how helpful they've been. When I started college, when I started my graduate program in creative writing, there were so many helpful people at UNL. One of them doesn't know how helpful she was, and in fact doesn't quite believe me that she was this helpful. She was a student in the program, but she was a little bit ahead of me. And she was so talented that our teacher used her stories in our class. So I was always looking up to her. And I had lost touch with her over the years until last night I walked in. And one of your professors is Amy Knox Brown, who was one of the people I looked up to. So I'm really delighted to be here to be a part of that program. She's one of the people who helped me, taught me how to make the leap from student writer to writer. And so you, the students here, are very lucky to have her. And I'm so impressed with so many things about College of St. Mary's, and I'm happy to be here. And to have a parking lot designated for this reading is going on my Facebook page. I'm going to read a chapter from the middle of the book, and there's not a whole lot you need to know about it beforehand. The characters are contained within it, but one of the main characters is Fritz Vogel. He's the husband of he and his wife are farmers in North Central Nebraska, German immigrants, and their experience at the beginning of America's involvement in World War I. So this takes place in 1917 after America has entered the war, and pretty much is self-contained. I'll talk a little bit more about it, but I think everything that you need to know you can hear here. The Adventures of Aging. I don't know which body part is going to go next, so I don't know if these glasses are going to work. The Vogel farm on the northeastern edge of the sand hills of Nebraska was as flat as the palm of a man's hand. Trace the contours of your own palm to know how deceptive that flatness can be. Level fields, like smooth skin, drop abruptly into gullies and draws caused by seasonal water flow. Land pillowed and sloped so gently the horizon seemed distant on all sides, the line of it marking the empty edge of an overturned blue bowl. A short walk in any direction, however, can swallow a human figure from sight. The highest point of this particular farm, say at the base of the thumb, marked the watershed between the Elkhorn River and the Big Sandy Creek. The Elkhorn flowing east to meet the Platte River, the Big Sandy winding north toward the Niobrara, they all joined the Missouri eventually. The rise between them was Fritz's favorite spot on his farm, perhaps in the entire world. Working this field, he always felt lighter and younger, closer to that wide blueness above that was, he believed, God's true home. On this particular Sunday morning, he had used the excuse of needing to check the ripeness of the wheat before Mass in order to arrive here just as the sun tip-kissed the world. The moment never failed to fill and tighten his chest. He faced east, patiently waiting for it to come again, light, lighter, gold. Wheat heads shimmered and glowed. The entire field moved like the back of a well-stroked cat. Fritz smiled for the sheer joy of it. For this one sacred moment, his blessings were without reserve or qualification. Goethe, 6 months pregnant, was round and clumsily graceful as a mare about to foal. His wheat fields were heavy with grain, his potato vines thick and thriving, his cattle lowed in the near distance. Life was a suspension of pure promise, and Fritz felt almost giddy with the beauty of it all. The whinny of a horse nearby startled him out of his reverie. His own team was back at the barn, and the sound of a horse so close, though not an unfriendly sound, seemed so out of place and unexpected that it caused a cascade of images in his mind that robbed him of his elation. Gypsies, he thought, and he worried about what would be gone when he returned from church. A few hens missing and the cow's milk dry would be bad enough, but lately the gypsies had gotten bolder. Raven-haired children had been seen roaming the alleys in Stewart and Victory Gardens denuded of harvest. The neighbors just to the south lost a pig a couple weeks past, and little could they afford it, what with Daniel still sick from the illness that put him down last spring. Fritz didn't mind the gypsies as much as the others did. The family group that came through last spring had proven to be fine pot menders, and the price they had charged was reasonable enough. For Fritz, the problem wasn't so much what they did or how much they lifted from any given farmstead. It was their strangeness. They seemed to appear in or disappear from communities without actually traveling the roads between them. He would go to bed one quiet night, and the next morning wake to the smell of a campfire, and there they were again, just across the road. Or evenings, after a long day of working in the fields, he would step out to look up at the stars after supper, and he would hear their jangling music and laughter come up from a camp near the river. They would be settled in before he even knew they were there. Not today, he thought. Not this season. They could not stay. With another baby coming and no sign of the war letting loose its stranglehold on a farmer's profits, Fritz simply didn't have enough to share. Telling them to move along wouldn't be easy, no telling what they'd do, but a man had to do what he had to do to protect his own. He headed for the ravine where they had last camped and from which he had heard the whinny. Where he expected to see three or four of the weathered green wagons, he saw instead the gleaming black of a new buggy. He stopped to study the scene before him. The upper branches of the cottonwood saplings crackled in the morning light, but darkness still bowled in the draw, down in the draw, where a dapple gray mare stood uneasily in her harness. Fritz recognized the mare, a delicate-looking Arabian, as one that belonged to Owens, the local storekeeper. Not quite sure what he had stumbled upon, he waited and listened. He thought he heard the muffled sound of a man's voice, and then the clink of glass on metal. "Hello, the buggy," he called out after a moment. The horse turned and looked at him, and Fritz noted the arch of her neck. He'd always dreamed of owning a fine horse like that, and if he were the envious type, it would be for something like her. She had cropped most of the grass within easy reach, and Fritz surmised she'd been standing there quite some time. He heard a rustling sound, and again a man's muffled voice. The buggy squeaked as a man rose from the ground on the other side, pulling heavily on the wheel for support. It took a moment for Fritz to recognize the figure as Owens. His usual neatly slicked hair was in disarray, a hank of it standing up at the back and another lopped across his eyes. His black suit coat was twisted off one shoulder, and his starched white shirt hung untucked. Thinking him hurt, Fritz started toward him, but before he had taken a step, Owens barked out a command. "Stop!" He pointed his finger at Fritz and narrowed his eyes. "Stay away!" Fritz froze in mid-step. "Are you all right, Owens? Have you had an accident?" Owens continued to point his finger at Fritz, sighting down the length of his arm as if aiming a pistol. "Owens?" Fritz said, not sure what to make of the other man's behavior. After a moment, Owens dropped his hand to his side, bent over, and vomited abruptly. Fritz started toward him again, but Owens put his hand up to stop him. "Leave me alone, you filthy German bastard." Fritz settled his weight evenly onto both feet, the better to meet whatever was coming. Owens stared at him through narrowed eyes. He wiped his mouth with his sleeve, elbow to wrist, an action so out of character for the fastidious man that it startled Fritz out of his anger. Neither man said anything for a stretch, and the only sound was insects in the grass and meadowlarks trilling from tree to tree. Owens fumbled in his pockets and pulled out a small bottle, shaking hands, tipped it to his lips. Even from this distance, Fritz recognized the amber liquid. His father had been a drunk, and he knew there was no point in talking or arguing about anything with Owens now. Whiskey logic had no ears. He considered walking away then, acting as though he had seen and heard nothing. But something didn't feel right to him. Fritz didn't pretend to know everything about Owen's life, but the man had no reputation as a drinker, and in a town like Stewart, that would be a secret impossible to keep. The sun topped the rise behind Fritz, and the morning glared fully onto Owen's face. A day's worth of stubble stood out darkly against his pale skin, his eyes so bloodshot they seemed about to bleed. Dried spittle streaked his chin. Long ago, Fritz's father had destroyed any sympathy he might have felt for a drinking man. He felt little more now than curiosity as he watched Owens. What Fritz had learned from his father was that a man in the clutches of the drink was not a man at all, but an animal trapped in a man's form. The confinement made him wild. He still sometimes had nightmares about his father turning into a wolf, his teeth growing longer, his hair shaggier, with each swallow of the foul-smelling liquid. He could see that creature in Owens now, as he spun suddenly and flung the empty bottle into the trees, his movements feral and unpredictable. The bottle thudded impotently in the grass beyond, and Owen bent over again, his hands on his knees. His face contorted, and Fritz thought he was going to vomit again. But instead, Owens cried out, a sound of desolation that seemed to come up from the darkness at the center of the earth, not from the small, broken man standing in the shimmering light of morning. The gray mare startled and lurched forward, but the front wheel was lodged firmly against a rock, and the phaeton creaked and shuddered but didn't move. "My son," Owens cried. The two words strung together in a long, keening moan. "My son, they've killed my son. Those lousy German bastards have killed my son." He slumped onto the ground and pressed his face into the sandy soil. Fritz closed his eyes and saw the face of Owen's son, a young man in a new and ill-fitting uniform when last he had seen him. The faces of his own sons replaced Owen's, and he saw them growing older as the world marched endlessly toward war in search of peace. He felt the air pressed out of his lungs, and a sudden weakness nearly buckled his knees. He moved toward Owens slowly and dropped down beside him. Tender and slow as only a man who has worked with animals all his life can be, he put his arms around Owens. He must have felt like a bear to that grieving man, so small in Fritz's massive embrace. But Owens did not struggle to pull away. Kneeling there on the yielding, familiar soil, Fritz held Owens close to his chest, awkward and careful, and so afraid of what the future held. He looked up to the top of the hill he had just come down. The close horizon formed a deceptive, ever-receding line. On the other side of it, Goethe and the children waited. The scene that I just read is a part of the fiction of this novel. I took the history of Nebraska and the history of my family and put it in a big pot and stirred it around and came up with the history of this family. But there, what I promise people when they read this is that you can trust the history. You can't tell This is not the story of my family, but my family is in it, and the history of Nebraska is as it was at the time. There is a scene at the beginning of the book where a man is beat up and tossed off a train, and that came from newspaper accounts. I spent several years, possibly back when we were in grad school together, I started researching this novel to find the context for it. I wanted to tell the story that my family had told me, which was the story of a baby that was born during the flu pandemic of 1918, and the doctor had labeled her a miracle. Both my grandmother and the baby were considered miracles because the statistics we later learned of pregnant women who became sick with the flu, 70 to 80% of them died from the flu. And there are no statistics about the babies that survived the flu because so few of them survived. So that was where the miracle baby came about. And the miracle baby of this book is actually my mother. So this was the story I grew up, and I wanted to tell this story as a writer. I had to learn how to be a writer so I could tell this story. I promised somebody back there about I would tell you what happened to these characters after the book ended, and the baby did grow up and become a mother and have seven kids of her own, and I was the sixth of them. And my grandmother, Gerta, in the book, had five more of them and continued to farm up until her 70s when they moved into a small town of Stuart, Nebraska. So these people really were as hardworking and durable as I portray them in the book. And I'm always delighted to hear when I go out into public to talk about the book or talk with people who have read the book, to hear how many Nebraskans, this rings true for Nebraska. People read this and they say, that's it, that's the Nebraska I know. And I love it even more when I go somewhere else and people say, I've never met anybody from Nebraska, I don't know anything what you're like. And then I will read about my Nebraska people and they pick up the book and suddenly Nebraska feels like a more interesting place to them. So I'm delighted about taking the book out into public. But I have a lot of ways that I can talk about this book, but I had promised to tell you who the characters were, promised someone. I would like to actually open it up to questions and make this a conversation, and I will answer questions. And I probably go on a lot longer than you really want, so make sure you really want to know what you ask. But if we could open it up. I think... Christine, there are microphones. So if you have a question, raise your hand and we will. You don't have to come up to the front, but back there are a couple of questions. Okay, for everybody to hear that, she's curious about how I came up with the title of the book, The Meaning of Names. And actually, the working title of the book, when I worked on it for so many years, the working title was So This Is Now, or This Is Now, because I'm a teacher, as I said, and I had this message that I wanted to hammer home. So like any good teacher, at least the ones I had, with their rulers pounding messages into your head, I wanted the title to speak to people to know that this is, even though this is historical fiction about something that happened in 1917, there are so many things that are continuing to happen today. And part of it is human nature, the way we are as humans. In the scene that I read, for example, Fritz is the one who's being discriminated against, part of the discriminated group. But he, in turn, was ready to discriminate against gypsies. So we have this sort of odd human nature tendency to behave in certain ways. So I tried to publish the book as This Is Now. And I went to a conference in San Francisco a few years ago, and it was a vetted kind of conference where you send the book out, you have to do all these things. So a juried conference. So when I got out there, I was really smug because I had made it to this great conference. And so I really thought I was something. And then I got out there, and the only thing the conference person said to me was, that's a stupid title. Get a new one. So I went looking for another title. And I'm really glad that I did. What I did then to go to the title is I first went to look at what kind of titles do I respond to? What makes you pick it up? Kathy was saying you respond to books that people tell you about, but there's also that you have to get one person to look at it. So you're looking for something that people will respond to. And so I came up with the Karen Shoemaker theory of titles out of this, that you get your title is a kind of question or a call to someone, and that they, before they think about it, they respond to it in some way. And the best way that I can describe that is if I say Marco, you say... You want a title that does a Marco Polo kind of thing. And to a certain extent, that's what I was aiming for, was this, the meaning of names. It begs the question, what is the meaning of names? And so a lot of people actually have come to the book because they thought they were going to find out that their name meant, like Karen means sincerity. And so, you know, they were accidents, but that's where the title came from. Also, I'm in poets, in writers' groups with poets, and they taught me that you often find the title for your poem or your book inside the book itself. And that's one of the stories in the book of Goethe recognizes Vogel. She tells of someone that her last name means bird, and because her name has two meanings, she realizes she's not an American. She's just labeled herself not American. So that's where the title came from. See, I told you, ask a question, I'm going to go a long time. So someone else had a question back there.
I tuned in very strongly to the anti-German sentiment, as my grandfather came from Germany in the early 1900s before the First World War. And I'm wondering, was there also that kind of hatred encountered in your family?
Well, it's an interesting thing to me. I think everybody heard the question. I have lots and lots of family stories. I grew up, there was a lot of people in the family, and they were a lot of talkers. So they would come, Sister Amater, someone in the group here is from Elgin and had her as a teacher. Sister Amater at Elgin Pope John was my aunt, who was actually Katie in the book. She grew up to be this sister. And she told stories. She talked so much that when she would come visit, we had to tag team listen because we didn't have the strength to stay. But we got a lot of stories. But what's really interesting to me was that out of all those stories, nobody ever would talk about why my grandfather, who I knew as Fred Vogel, had actually been born Fritz Vogel. So we didn't talk about that little section of history. And part of that I learned then from other research. When I started reading about this, writing about this time, people started handing me the oddest things. I had journals that their grandparents had written. And so it's not just published history where I got a lot of information. But when people were discriminated against, they didn't talk about it because that would invite more, that they were inviting more, they were criticizing. If you criticize your abuser, you're also criticizing America. So they didn't talk about it. So I know it happened. People wrote about it, but they didn't talk about it a lot. And my family, we didn't talk about it, how it actually happened. Some of the things that happened, like I know the man was lynched, and in the book, part of the fiction is I put my grandmother on the train where it happened. The character who was based on my grandmother. But we didn't talk about anti-German sentiment. But we didn't talk about being German. I didn't think of myself as German, connecting in any way to the German heritage. So it's interesting how many people mirror that response to me when they talk about the book. It wasn't until they read the book that they started asking questions. And that, to me, is one of the most valuable parts of this book, is how many conversations it started with other people that has nothing to do with me or my family or anything. It's people read the book and they go talk to their grandmother, or a grandmother comes and talks to their grandkids. And so there's this oral history that is carried on through the book. Claudia Rankin, black poet, gave the keynote address at the Associated Writing Conference that was last week. And part of her speech comes to mind when you say that she talks about racism or sexism or ageism or ableism or whatever, that unintentional racism is as painful to the person receiving on the receiving end as intentional. And so any time that we can start to be aware of what we're doing is a valuable thing. I think that's the value of fiction in general. It's a gentle way to learn what we don't want to learn. It's a way to step out of ourselves and try on new points of view. So that's why I'm a fiction writer. I love that kind of action. And I'm glad that I didn't set out to do that, but I'm glad that's how it worked. I will say one thing. What's the other English professor?
Oh, Shannon.
Shannon. I'm sorry. Shannon was the other English professor that I met last night. And the funny thing is, she's the niece of my fifth grade teacher, who was my first writing teacher. And one of the things I loved, after lunch, she was one of the teachers who would read to us. So if you didn't have questions, I was going to start reading again. So you're lucky that somebody raised their hand. So thank you very much.
You've been listening to a lecture program from the College of St. Mary on Noon Forum. We have heard highlights from the 2016 Great Conversations Luncheon, presented annually by Kathy Simon and the College of St. Mary. The keynote address this year was given by Karen Gettert Shoemaker, author of The Meaning of Names. This program was recorded by Omaha Public Radio on Tuesday afternoon, April 5th, 2016, for broadcast at this time. Special thanks to Brittany Long, Director of Marketing and Public Relations at the College of St. Mary, for helping to make the recording and broadcast of this program possible. Complete Noon Forum listings, as well as an archive of over 600 previous broadcasts, are available on our website, kios.org. Now, this is your producer and host, Bob Cote, thanking you for listening.